Thus no one can forgive you one of your sins, in the sense of altering the result. Once you have set the chain of events into motion, they must continue to their final conclusion. This may be soon, or it may be far in the future. It may even be in another incarnation. But it is certain. This does not mean that your teachings regarding repentance and redemption are completely in error. It is never too late to change the pattern of your life. You may, at any time, cease your defiance of these laws and begin trying to order your life in harmony with them. You cannot change that which is behind you, but you can alter your future in any manner you may desire. Those of you who regard the Christ as your personal Redeemer are correct if you use the word in its broadest sense, instead of in a literal and narrow manner. He will not magically save you without any effort on your part. That must be the result of your own decision and act. But he has outlined for you the laws of the unnameable, by means of which you may redeem yourself. If we see someone who is defying some important natural law, we will warn him, as you would warn someone who is preparing to jump from a high building. We do not enact any formal laws of our own concerning these things, for we do not feel that we have any moral right to do so. We are required to warn if we believe that the person is ignorant of the result of his course of action. But here our duty, and our rights, end. If, after being warned, the person insists on continuing as before, it becomes his or her sole responsibility. Force or violence may be used only when the rights of others are very seriously endangered. Our most important ethical foundation is our acceptance of universal brotherhood. We regard all intelligent beings, on all planets and planes, as brothers, regardless of race or physical form, if any. They may, at times, be erring brothers, but they are still brothers, and must be treated as such. Your hatred of one another, your discrimination against certain races and religions, and your wars against other peoples are not only morally wrong, but are also completely insane. Your material bodies are made of atoms which all come from one common source. Your inner souls are all part of the same unnameable. Each is only a small part of a much greater whole. Your hand would not, in a sudden fit of anger, gouge out your eye. Your teeth would not spitefully bite off your tongue. Why, then, should you be so foolish as to seek to harm some other person who is actually only another part of your own greater self? When you harm any part of an entirety, you harm the whole. And when you harm the whole, you harm every part. Thus, when you harm your fellow men, you harm yourself. In matters of sexual morality, we again have no specific laws, and each may theoretically act according to his or her own conscience. In actual practice, certain customs have been adopted by common consent, and most of our people conform to them. Those who seriously disregard these customs would be subjected to the moral pressure of the others. Since our people are all highly telepathic, it is impossible to conceal any low or evil intent, and likewise impossible for the others to conceal their contempt for the wrongdoer. Moral pressure thus becomes a powerful instrument of enforcing things which have been commonly agreed upon. Both polygamy and concubinage are socially accepted under certain conditions, but few practice either. Most men seem to feel that one wife is a sufficient complication, without multiplying their marital woes. Wedding rites are not regarded as creating the state of marriage, but are merely the act of solemnly proclaiming an already existing state. That is to say that we recognize that only mutual love can create and sanctify a marriage. The paramour who truly loves is wed in the eyes of the unnameable. The wife who loves not is still but a harlot, in spite of all the laws, customs and religious dogmas which you can write. Divorce among us could thus be accomplished by a simple public announcement by either party, but it is almost unknown. The most sacred of your laws, those regarding property rights, are the least among us. We held that one may retain property privately only to the degree that he can usefully employ it. If I had some object which I did not need and another needed it, he would simply take it as a natural matter of course, and none would think it the least strange. You, no doubt, would regard this as dishonest. We, on the other hand, regard it to be a crime of the worst order for your American government, for example, to permit unneeded grain to rot in the storage bins while millions starve to death for the lack of it. This attitude is probably due, in part, at least, to the fact that our people have no motive for trying to personally lay up stores of things against their future needs. There is an ample supply of all things to meet all the needs and reasonable desires of our people. This same condition could exist among you. Your planet has the ability to abundantly supply all of your people for many generations to come if things were intelligently produced and fairly distributed. But your people will not wait their turn in orderly fashion to receive their fair share, as intelligent beings should. Instead, they become a frantic, fighting and clawing mob of animals, each seeking to snatch immediately not only his own share but his neighbor's as well. In the field of production, you waste much labor and material making things, which are neither needed nor really desired. Instead of producing wealth, you produce ill. The driving force is not to produce better and more useful things, but merely to produce more, of anything. Those who can build and operate the largest factories, and make the greatest amount of anything, whether it is truly useful or not, are highly honored among you. They occupy a place of respect second only to those who are most skilled in the horrible arts of murdering their fellow men en masse. The joy of labor is fast disappearing from your life. This not only takes from your people one of the greatest joys of living, but also has an important effect upon the objects which you use. No two objects are exactly alike. Every person, and every other object, which comes into contact with them, leaves an impression, and modifies them in some manner. These trace emanations are important. An object built by a true craftsman, who builds something of the finer part of himself into it, can be your faithful servant forever. The same object, if built by human robots, will forever be a soulless thing. It may, at any time, turn upon you like a Frankenstein monster. Chapter 7 Reincarnation. Before I can explain anything about reincarnation, I must necessarily correct some erroneous concepts which most Earthlings hold about the nature of a human. The thing which you can see and feel, the material or physical body, is only one part of the individual. It is the least important part, being in its own behalf a purely animal thing, which is capable only of a few elementary physiochemical activities. This material or low self is very perishable and transitory, as you are aware. The middle self, which carries all the inherited memories and instincts, exists for a much longer time, but is not truly immortal. The high self is directly of and from the unnameable itself, and is part of its immortal and eternal being. Therefore it is also immortal and eternal. It may be transformed from one state to another, but it cannot die or be killed, since eternity is a circle, having neither beginning nor end, and since it is true that this high self lives on, then it is necessarily also true that it has always lived. The physical or low self is a matter of practical necessity on your plane in order to permit the two higher selves to effectively deal with other, material, things on your plane. The low self cannot be disregarded, since its defects and limitations hamper the two higher selves in some matters. It is important to constantly keep in mind, however, that this physical self is not the real self. It is merely something which the real self happens to be wearing at the time, just as the physical self, in turn, wears various articles of clothing. When the physical self dies, the two higher selves automatically go to a higher frequency level which occult students usually refer to as their astral plane. Most of the beings on this astral plane will eventually reincarnate back to the physiochemical level, although some of them may remain in a disembodied state for many thousands of years. Most of your people will suffer a severe psychic shock when their physical body dies. In spite of all their religious teachings, most of them inwardly fear that the death of the physical body is the end of everything. Many of them remain in a dazed condition for a long time, unable to fully realize what has happened to them. When they finally become aware of the fact that they are dead, they are usually seized with an overpowering urge to reincarnate as soon as possible. Among our people, birth is customarily by request, and all the details usually are arranged with the parents to be before discarnating from the old body. Our lifespan extends over several thousand years, but our bodies do eventually grow old, to the extent that they seriously hamper the functioning of the higher selves. When this point is reached, the person usually selects two trusted friends to be his or her parents, and arranges for the new body. Then, at the proper time, he will discarnate from the old body and enter the unborn body which is waiting for him. It would be theoretically possible for a person to construct a physical body, atom by atom, by mental means alone. It should, however, be a very complicated, delicate and lengthy process. It is much easier and simpler to let the body be born in the normal physiological manner, in which case the inherited memories of the middle self will handle all the detailed procedures. It is possible for the mother to take over mental control at any time before birth, and make any desired changes in the normal pattern. It is quite common for them to do this in order to bring out certain desired characteristics and repress others, which are deemed less desirable. Birth results in the temporary loss of previous memories, due to the fact that these must be consciously expressed through the medium of the brain cells, which require a considerable length of time to fully develop. At the proper time, the parents will take the necessary action to bring the desired memories to the surface. The matter of which memories are to be retained is usually one of the details which the person settles with the prospective parents before discarnating and reincarnating. The person himself will usually also help the process by attempting to sweep from his mind those memories which he does not wish to carry forward. It might be compared to your habit of discarding unwanted objects when moving from an old house to a new one. There is practically none of this conscious selection of parents among your people. The ordinary earthlings will, like the animals, usually reincarnate as soon as possible into the first available body of their species and race. The high birth rates after wars are due to the reincarnation urges of those who have been slain. This pressure from the astral impels those on your plane to create the bodies which these discarnate beings desire. The usual pattern is for the discarnate being to return to the locality most familiar to him. The locality of his death is not important, since travel on the astral is merely a matter of thought. Thus he would normally reincarnate into his former race and nationality. Among the more highly developed peoples of your planet, there is a certain amount of instinctive selection of parents. An advanced individual would be instinctively repelled by anything low or sordid, and would usually remain disembodied until he came in contact with a body about to be born to parents near his own level of advancement. This, being merely an instinctive reaction, is not always completely realized. Also, it sometimes happens that just as such an advanced being is about to reincarnate, he will be rudely brushed aside by a lower and more aggressive being who will seize the body for itself. This is one explanation for the occasional black sheep in good families. Earth plane mothers-to-be who have some knowledge of metaphysical things and the ability to concentrate their thoughts could do much to ensure the kind of children they desire. They should first erect a psychic shield around themselves and seal their aura, to prevent any undesirable entity entering the body of their unborn child. Then they should concentrate their thoughts to invite some high entity to enter and inhabit it. It is not very likely that they could accomplish the reincarnation of some particular individual, as we do, since this requires mental activity by both parties. It is theoretically possible to do this, however, provided that both parties are well advanced in the metaphysical sciences, and provided that arrangements have either been made prior to the disincarnation, or by reliable contact on the astral plane. Due to our long lifespan, as compared to yours, and the fact that our population is almost stationary in numbers, children are much rarer among us than among you. The matter of birth by request also gives rise to some peculiar psychological problems. We who are parents have the natural pride of all parents in our children. At the same time, however, we have the realization that they aren't actually ours at all, but are really individuals whom we have known for a long time, and who merely require a certain amount of temporary care and protection until they have regained their previous memories. I have, in various places, used the term plain, although I do not ordinarily like to do so. It is a word which is always likely to cause confusion, since it means so many different things to different people. There are several different levels, or planes, where both discarnate and material beings can, and do, reside. Some students refer to all of these upper levels as etheria. Others restrict the term to only the higher levels. We refer to our particular level as heaven, which should not be confused with your theological heaven. Our word, heavy, like your heavy, means dense. The symbol N is the abbreviation of a source concept. The free translation of heaven would then be a place of high vibrational frequency, or great density, from which we come. It might be noted that high-level material is much more dense than the material on your plane. Above these levels, and extending clear up to nirvana, or infinity, are the zones inhabited by those advanced beings who have cast off both the low and middle selves, and thus have become purely mental, or spiritual, beings. These zones would correspond more nearly to your theological concept of heaven than any other place. Those who have attained these levels never again reincarnate to any material level. On very rare occasions, one of these beings may temporarily descend to a lower level in order to bring a message of some sort to those on that plane, but these occasions are rare indeed. The great teachers, Osiris, the Christ, Buddha, and the others were such voluntary messengers. Chapter 8 Health. Many of your writers have longingly mentioned our supposed wonderful medical science. The truth is that we have practically none. Our people have little need of such. We do have and use various surgical and healing rays in cases of accidental damage to our physiochemical bodies. Unfortunately, however, these cannot be given to you at the present time. The scientific secrets involved could also be used to work great harm among your people if they should fall into the hands of men of ill will. Under the present circumstances, such men are so numerous and so powerful that it would be almost certain to be so misused. According to our technicians, there is also no certainty that these rays would be effective on your bodies. Due to the difference in frequency level, or plane, it probably would be necessary to develop an entirely new series of medical rays for your people. The natural and normal state of all beings is health, and our efforts are concentrated on maintaining this normal state. It is only when some individual has violated a natural or higher law that illness strikes him down. The understanding of these laws is more general among our people than among yours, but I will not pretend that we always perfectly comply with them. When we do not, we become ill, just as you do. In such cases, we do not bother with the symptoms or results, except in rare instances. The effort is to discover and correct the cause. Since you are a combination of physical and higher beings, you are subject to both natural and higher laws. Both of these must be observed, because ill health of the physical self will influence the psychic, and vice versa. Your material body exists on a physiochemical plane, and is therefore subject to certain physical and chemical laws. Render, therefore, unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. Do not attempt to defy these laws. Instead, attempt to learn them and live according to them. The natural laws regarding nutrition and health are quite widely known among your peoples, but also quite disregarded. They not only demand that you eat a balanced diet, but also that the food itself be healthy. You cannot maintain your health with food, which has lost its own health, and you cannot raise healthy food on land, which is worn out and tired from generations of improper use. Nor can you maintain health with food from which all traces of good have been refined away. The lack of these precious elements cannot be made up by the addition of any man-made substitutes. Man cannot create life, and these elements are life itself. If you would retain your health, then first rebuild your land. Foods grown on healthy land do not need the aid of chemical fertilizers and poisonous pesticides. They are able to take care of themselves in a natural manner. Next, eat sour food in as natural and unprocessed a state as possible. I shall not continue listing the things which you should and should not do, for it would be endless. As I noted before, these natural laws are all well known among your people. All you need do is search out the correct foods and follow sensible rules of living. The role of toxins in disease cannot be entirely disregarded, but has been greatly overrated. Toxins, by impairing the functions of some part of the body, render that part more susceptible to disease. It is important to keep in mind, however, that the basic cause of a disease was already existent. If this were not true, then the disease could not have attacked. Since it is true, it would have eventually come to the surface regardless of the toxin. Thus it might be said that toxins do hasten the outbreak, and may determine what part of the body will be diseased, but that they themselves are not the primary cause of disease. The basic cause of most of the more serious diseases is mental, or psychic. It is the result of some strong inner mental or emotional conflict, usually caused by the retention of destructive emotions, such as hate, fear, greed and selfishness. That is to say, one or more of the higher laws have been violated. Just as violation of the physiochemical laws will cause unfavorable reactions to the physical self, so will the violation of these higher laws bring about unfavorable reactions to the real or inner self. There is no quick and easy road to the real health of the inner self, which is essential to the health of the physical self. There are no pills or potions, which you can buy at your drugstores. You cannot merely summon up some astral guide or mentor and place the entire matter in his hands. Or merely recite a prayer, or some mystic formula or ritual. Nor construct some magic talisman. You must attain spiritual and mental health by correct day-to-day living. Then physical health will follow as naturally as night follows day. It is not really necessary that I, nor any other, should relate these higher laws or chart for you the pathway. Nor is it necessary that you employ any expert in such matters to interpret them for you. You already know these laws. Every sane being, deep within his secret inner self, knows that which is right and that which is wrong. It is not so much that you do not know, but that you do not yet accept the fact that it is a matter of life and death necessity to act according to what you know. But if you must have a message spelled out for you, then you already have it. It has been brought to your world many different times, in many different wordings, according to the understanding of the people of those times. The one most familiar to the people of your nation was brought to you almost 2,000 years ago. There can be no further revelation because everything has already been revealed. If any speak to you of things too sacred to be revealed, reject them as false prophets. Nothing was held back. No messenger would dare omit any of it. The messages are all complete, if you have the wit to understand them. The same message may be brought to you in still another wording, if the understanding of the people should require, but it will still be essentially the same message. The understanding of this message is really not beyond the mental ability of any of your people, but few have taken the trouble to understand it. Man refuses to think, except when dire necessity forces him to do so. It was much easier to deify the messenger than to try to understand the message. Then they could merely worship him with various prayers, hymns, rituals and ceremonies. All of these things could be learned by rote, and required no great mental effort. The Christ rebuked his own followers for this same error, "Why callest thou me good?" But professed Christians still prefer to pass lightly over the message and concentrate on adoration of the messenger. As a matter of record, he was a deity. This was necessarily so. None other could have brought the message. Oranges do not grooves upon thorn bushes. But that is also unimportant. It is always the message, which is of the first importance, not the messenger. Study your New Testament. Read and reread the parts printed in red, the direct sayings of the Christ. You can sip lightly over the parts printed in black, and not miss such of importance. Those usually represent someone else's opinion of what was meant by the messenger, and it is often wrong. Many of them could not understand the message themselves, so how could they explain it to others? Study the direct sayings of the Christ and make your own interpretations. While it is desirable for you to understand the message and all the laws which it includes, it is not necessary that you wait until you have done this before you enter upon the pathway. As I noted before, your own secret inner self knows what is right and what is wrong. Do no harm to any living creature, by thought, word or deed. Help any and all who may need help, be they friend, stranger or foe. A man must lose his life in order to gain his life. This is probably the most important and at the same time the most misunderstood part of the message. It means that you must submerge your own ego. In order to gain true life, you must lose that life which is selfish, vain, and greedy. You must lose your personal identity in selfless service to all the universe. Do not retire from the world and spend your time in study and meditation, as some religious groups do, for this is a selfish deed. You are seeking to benefit only your own vain self, not your fellow man. It may be necessary to spend some quiet moments in thought now and then, but thought which does not generate action is a sterile and worthless thing. The path is one of action. Do not sit idle and wait for your chance to do some great and spectacular good for the world, for this too is a selfish attitude. You are willing to serve, but you wish the praise and glory for what you do. Great things are merely a large number of small things. So busy yourself doing the small things which you meet along the road, the day-to-day monotonous and thankless tasks, and think not of credit or glory. Even Jesus the Christ did not seek to glorify himself. Although he was ordained to rank above all earthly kings and masters, yet he first had to learn the laws and bow his will to them. He lost his ego and vain self in the great power of universal brotherhood and selfless service. He became the most humble of men. Only then did he go forth as the true messenger of the great unnameable, and high priest after the order of Melchizedek. For just as a man must lose his life in order to gain it, so too must the greatest among you also be, at the same time, the least among you. Do not lose heart because you occasionally stray from the pathway. Man is a weak and imperfect thing, and few can hope to reach perfection on your plane. But the nearer one can come to perfection, the nearer he comes to that complete peace and health of the immortal inner self, which will not only result in perfection of physical health, but is also the true heaven on all planes. Chapter 9 Mental Powers. In one of your insane asylums there is a man whom I shall call John Doe, since there is nothing to be gained by exposing his true identity to the curious. According to his case records, he is there because he believes that he is the Christ, come to earth for the second time. But the records are wrong, as records often are. If he really did believe that he was the Christ, completely and all-inclusively, then he would in fact be the Christ. For things are because, and only because, people believe that they are. Every single thing in the universe exists solely because some intelligent being has, even knowingly or unknowingly, brought it into being by use of the creative powers of thought. The power of creative thought, the reaches of what you call the human mind, are theoretically without any limit whatsoever. If properly concentrated and directed, they can control the universal energy flows, which are infinite. Thus humans, and others, can create and they can destroy. It is important that all should know this, for they often do create unintentionally, without realizing that they are employing this all-powerful force. And thus, if one fears a thing intently enough, he may actually create the very thing he fears. But if he uses the powers wisely, then he can destroy those things which he has reason to fear, and create those which are good. But the belief and concentration must be complete, to the absolute exclusion of any and all other thoughts. In the case of John Doe, the belief is not complete and all-exclusive. There still exists in some far corner of his mind some small shred of realization that he is not really the Christ, but is merely John Doe.